This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Radio Cab Foundation, presenting its second annual benefit golf tournament, Saturday, July 8th, 9:30 a.m. at Heron Lakes Golf Course. Proceeds go to assist hospitalized children and disadvantaged families in the metro area. Registration and prize information at radiocabcares.org.
From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
Torture is prohibited in Guantanamo. It's prohibited anywhere in the world by any of our U.S. government agencies holding people anywhere in the world. It's also simply wrong as a matter of law to state that holding individuals indefinitely without charging them is wrong.
The United States has rejected calls by the United Nations for the closure of its prison camp at Guantanamo Bay. A U.N. panel issued a report last week that said the indefinite detention of prisoners at Guantanamo violates the world's ban on torture. We'll speak with one of the 10 members of the UN Committee Against Torture, as well as the International Legal Director of Human Rights First.
The Committee Against Torture issued a very strong report against the United States practices of secret detention, enforced disappearances. It concerned domestic problems in U.S. prisons. It rejected just about every contention the United States made that it was in compliance with its international obligations.
Then former U.S. Army chaplain and Guantanamo prisoner, James Yee.
The ages of some of the prisoners down there, as young as 12 to 14 years old, prisoners as young as 12 to 14 years old were being held down in Guantanamo when I was there.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Iraq, lawmakers have finally formed a new unity government 5 months after the December election. The government, led by Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, met for the first time this week inside the U.S.-controlled Green Zone. Several key cabinet positions remain unfilled, including Minister of Defense and Minister of the Interior. On Sunday, President Bush called leaders in Iraq to congratulate them on the new government.
The formation of a unity government in Iraq is a new day for the millions of Iraqis who want to live in freedom. And the formation of the unity government in Iraq begins a new chapter in our relationship with Iraq.
The New York Times reports the Bush administration played a major role in the formation of the new government. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq, Zalmay Khalilzad, personally vetted and reviewed candidates for crucial ministries and urged rival Iraqi party leaders to sign on to the new government. U.S. officials are also being placed inside key ministries to act as advisors. On Sunday, the new Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki vowed to bring stability to Iraq and to use maximum force to end the violence that's killed thousands in recent months. Middle East analyst Juan Cole said four distinct wars are now being fought in Iraq simultaneously. There is a Sunni Arab guerrilla war to expel U.S. troops from the Sunni heartland, a militant Shiite guerrilla war to expel the British from the south, a civil war between the Sunni Shiites and the Kurdish war against Arabs and Turkmen in Kirkuk province. British journalist Patrick Coburn says Iraq is disintegrating as ethnic cleansing takes hold on a massive scale. On Sunday, at least 24 people died, including 13 at a Baghdad restaurant that was attacked by a suicide bomber. In Afghanistan, a U.S.-led airstrike has killed at least 76 people. The BBC reports the dead include as many as 30 civilians, including children. The bombing raid in southern Afghanistan occurred shortly after midnight today. The U.S. military has denied reports of civilian casualties and claimed that all the dead were members of the Taliban. The airstrike occurred in a region which has recently seen some of the country's fiercest fighting since the fall of the Taliban nearly 5 years ago. In New Orleans, Ray Nagin has been reelected as the city's mayor in a closely watched election that came about 9 months after Hurricane Katrina devastated the city.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for one New Orleans. It's time for one New Orleans today. It's time for one New Orleans tomorrow. It's time for one New Orleans forever. And as Gandhi once said, our clothes. Gandhi said it best. He said, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. God bless you.
Ray Nagin, a former telecom executive, won 52% of the vote. Louisiana's Lieutenant Governor Mitch Landrieu won 48%. It was the city's closest mayoral election ever. Landrieu would have become the city's first white mayor since his father held the post in the late 70s. The vote came at a time that half New Orleans residents still haven't been able to return home, including as many as 200,000 registered voters, mostly African American. Meanwhile, the Los Angeles Times reports a new study has raised questions about the strength of the levees around New Orleans. Engineers at UC Berkeley said the levees have a wide range of design and construction defects, and that there are serious doubts that the system can withstand the pounding of another hurricane the size of Katrina. The paper reports the findings undermine assurances by the Bush administration and the Army Corps of Engineers that the $3 billion spent on the levees will provide a higher level of protection to New Orleans. The study also questions the competency of the Corps of Engineers to oversee public safety projects across the nation. The study criticized the Corps for not detecting problems such as the fact that sections of the levees were built with crushed seashells. Questions are being raised over whether the CIA will continue to use an interrogation method known as waterboarding, despite last year's congressional ban on the cruel, degrading, and inhumane treatment of detainees. The technique involves immersing a prisoner's head in water to make them think that they're drowning. Human rights groups consider it a form of torture. In 2004, a CIA inspector general concluded that waterboarding and other methods approved by the agency after 9/11 probably violated the International Convention Against Torture. Last week, President Bush's pick to head the CIA, General Michael Hayden, refused to publicly state whether he considers waterboarding to be an acceptable practice. He was questioned by California Senator Dianne Feinstein.
On March 17, 2005, Director Porter Goss stated to the Senate Armed Services Committee that waterboarding fell into, quote, an area of what I will call professional interrogation techniques, end quote. Do you agree with that assessment? Do you agree with Mr. Goss's statement that waterboarding may be acceptable? If not, what steps have been taken or do you plan to take to correct the impression that may have been left with agency employees by Mr. Goss's remarks?
Yes, ma'am. And again, let me defer that to closed session and I would be happy to discuss it in some detail.
That was General Michael Hayden responding to questions from California Senator Dianne Feinstein. The country's prison population here has reached almost $2.2 million. One in every 136 U.S. residents is now behind bars. The nation's prison population increased by more than 1,000 prisoners a week last year. New data also shows that 12% of African American men between the ages of 25 and 29 are now incarcerated. That's more than 10 times the incarceration rate of white men. Meanwhile, a new report from the Women's Prison Association has found the number of women imprisoned in the United States has increased by over 750% since 1977. In the Gaza Strip, fighting has intensified between Palestinian factions loyal to Hamas and the former ruling party Fatah. On Saturday, the Palestinians' chief intelligence officer, Tariq Abu Rajab, was seriously wounded in an attempt on his life. On Sunday, security officials found a 150-pound bomb planted along a road used by Gaza's security chief, Rashid Abu Shbak. Both officials are allies of former Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. On Sunday, Abbas said he feared the fighting between Hamas and Fatah could lead to civil war. Meanwhile, Israel is continuing to carry out its campaign of assassinating Palestinian militants inside the Gaza Strip. On Saturday, an Israeli missile struck a car carrying a commander in the militant group Islamic Jihad. The attack killed a man and three others, including a four-year-old boy. In Washington, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez suggested Sunday the Justice Department may begin prosecuting journalists for writing articles based on classified information. Under the Espionage Act of 1917, it's a crime for an unauthorized person to receive national defense information and transmit it to others, but it has seldom, if ever, been used to target journalists. Gonzalez's comments came on ABC's This Week. He was questioned by George Stephanopoulos.
So you believe journalists can be prosecuted for publishing classified information? Well, again, George, it depends on the circumstances. There are some statutes on the book which, if you read the language carefully, would seem to indicate that that is a possibility. That's a policy judgment by the Congress in passing that kind of legislation. We have an obligation to enforce those laws. We have an obligation to ensure that our national security is protected.
That was Alberto Gonzalez appearing on ABC's This Week. In other news from Washington, the FBI has raided the office of Democratic Congressmember William Jefferson of Louisiana as part of a bribery investigation. Authorities said it marked the first time the FBI has ever raided the office of a sitting congressman. 15 FBI agents entered his office just after 7 p.m. on Saturday and left about 18 hours later. Jefferson has not yet been charged with a crime, but the FBI claims it has videotape evidence that he accepted a $100,000 bribe last year from a person cooperating with the FBI. In labor news, a coal mine explosion in Kentucky has killed 5 miners. So far this year, 31 miners have now died in accidents, making it the deadliest year for the mine industry since 2001. The Nobel Peace Prize-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz has publicly backed Bolivia's decision to nationalize its vast gas and oil reserves and to renegotiate all contracts with foreign oil companies. Stiglitz met with Bolivian President Evo Morales Friday in La Paz. The former World Bank official said Bolivia was right to receive just compensation for its natural resources and that nationalization is part of a process of returning what already belonged to the Bolivian government. Stiglitz added, it is clear that the neoliberal economic policies of Washington have failed the people of Bolivia. In Chile, newly elected President Michelle Bachelet gave her first State of the Nation address Sunday and vowed to invest heavily in health, housing, and education.
Today, I present to the country the 4 major transformations my government will push. These are big changes in 4 areas that are crucial for us to overcome exclusion and to construct a society that is more inclusive. We have the historic mandate to do it. We have the obligation to reach 2010 with a more modern country that is integrated and developed. The first transformation is centered in Chile's private pension system. Without dignified and secure pensions, there cannot be peaceful aging. The second transformation will happen in the education system. We need more preschools and schools and clubs of higher quality for the older children. The third transformation has to do with innovation and implementation of new policies to stimulate growth. The fourth transformation will permit us to have friendly neighborhoods with a good quality of life for the people.
Michelle Bachelet, who is the Chile's first female president, also promised to seek truth and justice for human rights violations committed during the U.S.-backed military dictatorship of General Augusto Pinochet. Bachelet said the country should never stop searching for the dissidents who were disappeared by the Pinochet regime. Both Bachelet and her mother were tortured under Pinochet. Her father was a general who was tortured and died. And the world-renowned dancer, choreographer, and social activist Catherine Dunham has died at the age of 96. Dunham is best known for leaving Broadway to teach in one of America's poorest cities, East St. Louis. In 1992, she went on a 47-day hunger strike to protest U.S. policy that repatriated Haitian refugees. Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.